Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. We're back after a week off. John Schmelk, Lance Mehta with you. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us that way. And Lance, the slow part of the NFL offseason continues. Next week you have the franchise tag stuff going on, but until then it's very, very quiet. We will continue our look at the rest of the NFL and the Giants' opponents today. Today we have the Dallas Cowboys with our good buddy Mickey Spagnuolo from DallasCowboys.com. He'll join us at 12:15. And Lance, it's going to be a very competitive NFC East.
Yeah, this division is extremely deep, especially when you look at the offensive weapons. I think what separates this division right now, John, is the defense. I think if you look on paper, the Giants have the least amount of questions because the core is essentially returning from last season and the Giants were statistically the best defense. Everybody else has made more changes and relying on some rookies to be a little bit more impactful than some veterans. The Eagles have revamped their secondary. The Redskins have made changes to their front seven, and the Cowboys are bringing in some young guys on the back end as well. So those teams, you're going to have to wait till you see maybe two or three games, I think, to have a better feel, as opposed to the Giants, who I think we pretty much know the identity of this defense.
Absolutely. If you want to hear us continue to break down the Giants' opponents, the Dallas Cowboys, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app right now and check out the remainder of the program. We are going to get to your calls early and often in today's show because Mickey will join us at 12:15. Want to get you in before that. We're not sure how much time we'll have after the spot to continue the conversation with the caller. So let's get to it at 201-939-4513 and go to Bash in Ohio. He's up first on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Bash.
How's it going, man?
Doing well, Bash. What's up?
Good to hear your voices after a week off. Everything's good.
Good to be back.
question, I wanted to get into a little bit of action about the scheduling.
Okay.
I know as far as we play the NFC and AFC West this year, I know how the schedule works every 4 years, rotate every 4 year rotation and stuff. But we play usually in the conference, they play the teams that have the same records as them.
Yep.
But
yep.
Here, when we play the AFC East, who do we play as far as in the NFC? When we face the AFC, I know we faced the AFC East like 2 years ago, a couple of years ago. Who do we face in the NFC conference?
Well, it's the NFC West this year. Is that what you're asking?
No, he's saying when the Giants will eventually play the AFC East. NFC division will they play? And, Bash, here's the thing.
Okay.
It doesn't line up the same way all the time. Because think about it. There are only three divisions in the NFC the Giants can play because they play the NFC East every year. But there are four AFC divisions that they play every year. So it really varies from season to season. Just for an example, in 2019, the Giants once again play the AFC East. That particular year, they happen to also play the NFC North. Next year, they have the AFC South and the NFC South. So depending on the season, those things can change. The Giants, I believe it was 12 years ago, played both AFC and the NFC West. And it made sense. It rotates back over after 12 years based on the 3-4 pattern. So it really depends. But the next time the Giants play the AFC East, they will play the NFC North in 2019.
Okay. So it rotates as far as – I know we play 3-4. So every 3 years it rotates as far as when we play NFC East. But when we play AFC East, it's a different division we play every time.
Yeah, basically how it works, Bash, is you have a cycle. So the Giants last year played the AFC North. This year they get the AFC West. In 18, they have the AFC South. In 19, they have the AFC East. And then this year, they have the NFC West. Next year is the NFC South. And then it's back to the NFC North again because they played the NFC North last year.
We played the NFC North last year.
Correct.
With the AFC North, we played the NFC North last year as well, correct?
Right, correct.
Yep.
Okay. What, are you making plans for the future or something, Bash?
How that works.
Yeah, but Bash, all it is a very simple rotation. So all the conferences, or all the divisions, rather, play every other division once every 3 or 4 years, whether it's intra-conference or inter-conference.
Okay. I just wanted to get more clarity on how that works when we play the AFC East. So we just, got it. I understand it now.
Cool.
Yep. All right, Bash.
Thank you, Bash. Appreciate it. And I don't see opponents anywhere for after 2019. I'm not sure the NFL has set that yet. Is that... Could be maybe when the collective bargaining agreement is up, maybe.
So it
that might be new rules, maybe, or something. I'm
Unless
not sure how that works.
The website that you're looking at just stopped at that point too. I mean, that's also
We could ask our producer, because I am looking at the Giants website.
Oh, you're looking at the website you were looking at. Okay, so then maybe we should consult with our producer then. He should be able to clarify all
this. They haven't announced
it
yet.
I don't know
yet,
why
right,
you're
Dave?
Asking
after
me the difficult questions.
I didn't think so.
So yeah. Okay.
Well,
so
I'm not the one always trying to call out Dave.
No,
over
no,
here.
I wasn't it's trying fine. To call him out. All I was saying it was I thought maybe perhaps they just
no, I don't think
get
the NFL, I don't think the NFL has released that yet, but I imagine they will.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I think we should get through the 2017 season first before we start worrying about who's playing who in 19 and 20.
The formula might change, but odds are it's not going to, because I think it's actually kind of worked pretty well the last few years. And, you know, people worry about, oh, but then, you know, the strength of schedule from team to team really doesn't change. But you can try to set up a team with a tough strength of schedule. It might not end up being that way, depending on how teams actually play for that particular season.
Of course, because how a team performed in 2016, John, is not indicative of what's going to happen in 2017. That's why it's comical to me when they come up with these statistical breakdowns of strength of schedule. So, for example, you're looking at the 2016 results for all the teams you're playing in 2017. How is that relevant? If teams lost veterans, if they made trades, if they were weakened in certain spots, or a player gets hurt, it makes no difference how well or how bad they performed in 2016.
And Dave makes a good point. One of the things that might change with the formula is that the way they split it up with home and away. For example, this year the Giants and Cowboys are playing the Raiders and the Broncos on the road, but they're hosting the Chargers and the Chiefs. So they split it up. They have the two far West Coast teams separated, so you don't have to travel to both San Diego and Oakland, per se. And they have the two Midwest teams, Kansas City and Denver, split up. So two NFC East teams don't get the advantage of not having to have as much travel. Same thing in the NFC West. You have the Giants are going to travel to Arizona, and they're going to travel to who am I missing? Sorry.
Which division are we talking about?
NFC West. They're going to Arizona, to San Francisco. So you don't go to two California teams in the same year. But as Dave pointed out on the document here, since the Rams moved from St. Louis
that
to LA
now,
that might have them rebalance how they split that's the fair. Opponents home and away in the division. That's a very good point.
But also, just to understand the basics, is the fact that 4 years ago the Giants hosted the Broncos and the Raiders. So that's why 4 years later they then head to those respective locations. That's at least how they work out the logistics. But you're right. The rationale was it's better to group Denver with Oakland as opposed to two West Coast teams San Diego and Oakland
within the same
division, if you're looking at it. And then obviously they're moving to LA, but that's not a drastic difference compared to the Rams, who are actually moving from the middle of the country to the West Coast.
Yeah, it's time zone. That makes sense. 201-939-4513. Christian in Long Island is joining us next. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great, Christian. What's up?
Just had a couple questions. One, I wanted to get your opinion on the two most interesting position battles, one on the offensive side, one on the defensive side for training camp. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get your opinion on top five Giants running backs of all time.
Okay, why don't you start with the position battles, and I'll start thinking about my running back list.
Do you have certain opinion?
Okay.
I thought maybe you had a few in mind, too.
Correct.
I think that's what you were alluding to.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a few when you look at this roster. One of them that jumps out to me when I look at the breakdown is tight end, because, I mean, I know Evan Engram is at least positioned to be the starter, but there's a great deal of depth behind Evan Engram. So
sounds
I'm
like
very interested to see how the rest of the depth chart plays out. I think there's much more depth at tight end on this year's roster than what we've seen, at least going 3 or 4 years back. So that, to me, is intriguing to watch what's exactly going to take place at the tight end spot. The linebacker spot, I think, is another one to watch. Not so much individual positions, but the grouping as a whole, how the depth chart plays out. Because those are two positions in particular that I just named, one on offense, one on defense, where there's at least some question marks, some battles, some things to play out. The defensive line is fairly set. I understand that they have to wait and see who's going to replace Jonathan Hankins, but I think we know the main candidates, and I don't think there's going to be any curveballs or any surprises. But
depth is there, though, to battle the back end.
The linebackers, though, and the tight ends, I think there's actually positions to carve out where people could jump up or perhaps take a step back, depending on how they perform.
Yeah, I think in terms of playing time, generally, if you're looking at that sort of position battle. I agree. I think those two are very good. I do think you're going to have interesting depth battles at the cornerback position, the wide receiver position, and the back end of the defensive line. I think you have three positions where you have a number of guys that I think are NFL caliber, and I think the Giants, you know, will have some very tough decisions to make at the end of camp as to who they want to keep at those positions. But I think those are generally the major battles, and I think backup quarterback's interesting.
Of course, who's going to be two, who's going to be three.
I guess
you're right. We probably know where they're allotted, but who would be perhaps the veteran backup that they retain?
Is it Geno Smith or is it Josh Johnson?
That at least is going to be something that's going to be decided in the preseason. I think running back's another position to throw out there, too.
For depth, absolutely.
Who's going to be that maybe third or fourth running back and what type of roles they're going to take, too?
Yeah, and I agree. I think a running back can earn a bigger role by how they play. You know, can Wayne Gallman step up and show the coaches that he's ready to take, you know, some of the load off Paul Perkins? Does Orleans Darkwa stay healthy and finally break into a more of a full-time offensive role? Or is it, you know, a veteran like Sean Drawn that shows that he can do it? I think those are all interesting choices, and I think you're right. I agree. I think that's a pretty good battle.
And also, even though Paul Perkins has been named the starter, the front runner, according to Ben McAdoo when he did a recent interview with WFAN, is he going to be the workhorse, or is it going to be more of a committee type of situation? That's another thing to monitor.
And again, I think it could go either way, depending on how other people play. So I think it's interesting. We're going to have Mickey Spagnuolo with us in a second, but I want to address the second part of Christian's question first. Top five Giants running backs of all time. To me, the first part of the first two are fairly easy. I think it's Tiki and Rodney Hampton, and I don't think there's really much of a question there. Tiki, by far, is the franchise's all-time leading rusher. Rodney Hampton has a comfortable 1,700-yard lead on number three, Joe Moore. So I think those are the two easy ones at the top of the list. I think Joe Morris at three makes sense. It's hard for me to argue that. Super Bowl winner, starter on a Super Bowl team. But I think the interesting one is, where do you put Frank Gifford? You know, because back then, Frank Gifford
played a million different positions.
He was a receiver. Yeah. He threw the football. He ran it. I mean, the fact that he's, you know, top 10 on the running back list, and given everything else that he did, I mean, Frank Gifford probably would be right after Tiki, you know, given everything else that he did. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the only Hall of Famer on this list, by the way. So overall player, he would be number one. But just as a running back, I think he would probably make your top five. And then I guess, you know, Jacobs and Bradshaw would probably, you know, round it out. I would probably take Jacobs over Bradshaw simply because of durability.
Yeah.
And he was available more. But at their best, I think Bradshaw is probably a better back than Jacobs, if you know what I mean.
Well, like, more versatile.
Well, if you're promising me 16 games of full health Ahmad Bradshaw, I think he's a better player than 16 games full health Brandon Jacobs, but you never got that out of Bradshaw. No,
Bradshaw's a much more dangerous running back in terms of what he could do. Now, I think Jacobs is overlooked because Jacobs was a decent receiver when they got him out in open space, and there's a number of highlights that you could look where he actually did plenty of damage, but I would agree with you. If you have Bradshaw for 16 games, I'm not going to be so quick to take him off the field knowing all of the things that he could do. Mm-hmm. Plus, he's very good in terms of pass protection as well.
You have Tiki number one, though?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think your five is fine. I mean, Alex Webster's another name to throw out there. But to me, it's hard for me to leave out Jacobs or Bradshaw in that top five. And that's why I would give them the edge over Alex Webster.
I agree.
And if you want to take Frank Gifford off the list, I don't think you're wrong for taking him off. It's no disrespect to him. It's just he's Mr. Versatility.
He wasn't a straight-up running back.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you just want to go pure rushers, then I think you take Gifford off the list, and maybe that opens the door for a guy like Alex Webster.
I think Tiki is very underappreciated, though. I mean, he's a guy that I know, obviously, the stuff that he has said, if he would just keep his mouth shut, he would be a guy that would show up all the time, and Giant fans would love him to death. I mean, I would argue that he has almost Hall of Fame numbers. I mean, he has 10,000 rushing yards. He has a lot of receptions, a lot of receiving yards. I would argue for much of his career, you know, for a good 4 or 5 year stretch, he was a better player than Jerome Bettis, who made the Hall of Fame in only a couple seasons. So I think Tiki is very much underappreciated because his mouth gets in the way of his results.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to compare him to Terrell Owens, but I feel like we have a similar conversation with Terrell Owens in terms of the Hall of Fame because people are looking more of the antics or what happened in the locker room.
Yeah, different type of antics, though.
No, of course, different, but the reason I guess I'm bringing that up is if you were to ask me to judge whether or not a player is worthy of going to the Hall of Fame or worthy of being a top five player, to me it's purely what they did on the field.
But my argument is that Terrell Owens' antics negatively affected his team and their play on the field, while Tiki was more after he retired, stuff he said about the organization when he became a member of the media.
It's a fair point, but I would still say that Owens did more than enough on the field, regardless of what you think may have taken away from the team.
And
to me, it's a no-brainer.
And that, well, you know what? Let's ask our next guest about that, because he was in the locker room with Terrell Owens in Dallas for a few years, and I'm
sure
he didn't expect this question to start the interview. But guess what, Mickey? You're getting it. Your take on Terrell Owens' Hall of Fame in terms of balancing the type of discord he tended to cause from team to team, locker room lawyer, all that stuff, compared to the obviously dominant player he was on the field.
Yeah, I think that that's why I think he had to wait to get in. I don't think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know if he was a second ballot Hall of Famer, but maybe by the third or fourth time, that'll be paying, I think, enough penance for the other part of it that seemingly always offset his talent. So to me, I thought the wait was justified, and then at some point I think he gets in on the talent and his production.
Mickey, we agree. I think we're on the same page. So let's talk about the Cowboys in their current form, and I'll start with a general question before we hit some of the specific position groups and changes the Cowboys have made. There seems to be a general thought in NFL circles, media around the league, TV, whatever you want to talk about, that the Cowboys are going to take a big step back this year. Why do you think that's true, or why do you think that's untrue?
That they think that, or that that will happen?
That will happen.
I think a lot of the reasons why everybody's thinking that is because they lost some starters on defense. And I don't look at it as they lost starters. They chose not to re-sign those guys.
That's true.
So to me, they know more about their free agents than other teams do. You know, this has happened in the past when the Cowboys have had success. It's like, oh, we got to sign this guy. We got to sign that guy. Well, I can show you a bunch of guys that signed big free agent contracts from those Super Bowl teams in the 90s, and it didn't pan out. Elvin Harper comes to mind at Tampa Bay.
Larry Brown, James Washington.
Dixon Edward, Larry Brown. Yeah, exactly. Look, in 2014, we headed to training camp, and the talk, and myself included, was, can this defense get any better? Because it was the last ranked defense in 2013. In 2015, they went to training camp, and the talk was, can this defense get any better? And then in 2016, I wrote the same thing. This is all about the defense, and we'll probably say the same thing again. Yet, can the defense get any better? Well, each of those previous 3 years, they improved. Now, can they make the next jump? That'll be the question. Offensively, they're still going to score a lot of points, and that's how they got where they got last year. It certainly wasn't because of the defense totally. It was because of the offense. In the 15 games that Dak Prescott started, they were averaging more than 27 points a game. So I see no reason why they would take a step back offensively this year. I think they should be better. The two main guys, Dak and Zeke, they're not rookies anymore. I think that, you know, I don't see them taking a big step back. And the guys out in Vegas that know more than most of us, who did they rank with the second best chance to win the Super Bowl? It was the Dallas Cowboys behind New England. So I don't agree with this stepping back. I don't agree with sophomore slump for a quarterback who's now got 16 games under his belt and an entire offseason as the starting quarterback, which he didn't have last year. I mean, my goodness, when they did the OTAs and the mini camps last year in the beginning of training camp, he was the third quarterback, and he was sharing those third snaps with Jamil Showers. And it kind of reminded me when they went to the OTAs this year, and Dak pointed out, he goes, yeah, last year at this time I got three snaps. Well, he's the guy. So to me, he should get better. I don't see any reason why he should regress. I think us guys in the media, and I remember Bill Belichick saying this at a Super Bowl. He said, do you guys just have this book? And you look in the book, and those are the questions you're supposed to ask, or these are the topics you're supposed to discuss. And so somewhere in that chapter is second-year quarterback has sophomore slump. Well, they have slumps if they're gimmick quarterbacks and they came out of nowhere. I don't think Dak was a gimmick quarterback. He played the position like you're supposed to play it. His success wasn't because he was running around playing helter-skelter football. He stood in the pocket for the majority of the time and threw the ball down the field. He wasn't just reading half the field like a lot of rookie quarterbacks do. He was scanning two, three receivers at times. So to me, I see no reason why he should have a sophomore slump, and I see no reason why the Cowboys should take a step back this year. As a matter of fact, I think their depth on defense with the young guys they added might be better. And not from the top, but from the bottom up, I think the depth will be stronger than they had in the last couple of years.
Well, Mickey, you alluded to the fact that the core of this offense in terms of the weapons around Dak Prescott are pretty much in good shape. The one thing, though, may be a question mark is the offensive line. And I think there's been some changes on the offensive line this offseason, more so than what we've seen in previous offseasons. Doug Free retires at right tackle. Ronald Leary, the left guard, leaves in free agency to sign with Denver. What are some of the changes you anticipate on the offensive line, and how much is continuity perhaps a question mark heading into 2017?
Well, one of those spots will be filled by Lael Collins, and Lael Collins is a pretty darn good football player. Many considered a first-round draft choice. He got hurt early last year. That caused Ron Leary to win the starting job. So Ron Leary wasn't going to start if Lael Collins didn't get hurt. So to me, that's a push. So now, can you replace Doug Free? Well, the talk around here was, can the Cowboys replace Doug Free? He's killing them. You know, that he's not playing well. Well, I didn't subscribe to that because I think his veteran leadership and his savvy on the field offset whatever physical limitations he might have had. So we'll see how that works out. One of those spots is going to be filled by Lael Collins. So to me, all they got to do is fill one spot. And, you know, they got three Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. I don't know if anybody's ever had five or even four, right? So somewhere along the line, you got to get along with just a guy. And so, you know, they've got candidates, and that'll be one of the things we look, you know, watch in training camp. You know, what happens? Is Chaz Green a better right tackle than Jonathan Cooper is a left guard? Does Lael Collins have to play right tackle? Then who's your left guard? So if that's the biggest question you have on offense, who's your left guard, I think you'll be okay. To me, left guard, all right, you know, you'd love to have a stud in there. But again, with a salary cap and the way things go in free agency, you can't have a steak on every plate. But if you get four out of five, that's still pretty good.
Mickey, no one in the NFL was really able to slow down Ezekiel Elliott last year. This year, the only thing that might slow him down, and this has kind of been discussed a little bit, the NFL hasn't really made any statements yet on it, is a potential suspension for some off-the-field stuff. Have you heard anything? And I know the investigation is still ongoing, according to the league, when something like that might come down and whether or not there's any anticipation that the Cowboys might have to be without Ezekiel Elliott for any amount of time this year?
I think that's a loose use of the term investigation. I'm not sure they're investigating. I think they're just waiting to see if something falls in their lap. And in case something jumps out that they haven't found out yet, they don't want to look bad. So everybody can sit there, you know, you can ask me the question and I'll say, yeah, the NFL hasn't closed the case. Well, no, but are they doing anything? I think they're just afraid that a picture is going to show up or a video is going to show up. And so they don't want to wash their hands of the case and say, okay, this is closed. It doesn't have to be closed, right? And as far as, you know, anybody knows, there's nothing going on. There's nothing else to find. But I think they've become so sensitive to stuff showing up that they couldn't find themselves that they're just saying, okay, we're just going to let it ride. And just make sure that we cover ourselves more so than we're digging into something that we don't know. So I don't know that anybody around here is worried about any impending suspension for him. He hasn't been convicted of anything. Nothing has come up. So unless something gets invented here over the next month or he does something that raises somebody's attention, I don't see where that's a problem.
Talking with Mickey Spagnola, DallasCowboys.com. Sticking with the running game, Mickey, last season a lot of focus was on, obviously, Ezekiel Elliott because we expected that he would do a lot of damage on the ground. But I think what's interesting is who plays behind him. Darren McFadden, for example, was on the pup list for the majority of last season, came on late, and Alfred Morris is still in the mix. Do you see them perhaps using some of those personnel behind Ezekiel Elliott a little bit more this season to maybe preserve Elliott, or is Zeke still going to be the workhorse and that's pretty much going to be it?
I think he's the workhorse, and then when he needs a blow, Darren McFadden probably is the first guy up, sort of the way they finished the season. I mean, there were times last year where they had both of them in the backfield for a play or two or whatever formation they wanted to get in. But I think it's Zeke, and I think he catches more passes than he did last year. I don't think his carries go down. I think his receptions go up. Better understanding of some of the passing routes, some of the formations, things they want him to do. But I think that the league found out that if they get the ball in his hands in the open field in one-on-one situations, they're in big trouble. So to me, and if you think back to Emmitt Smith, you know, when he was rushing for 1,500 yards, 1,700 yards, carrying the ball 300 times a season, he was catching the ball 40 to 50 to 60 times a season. So no one worried about overworking Emmitt Smith. And I don't see anybody worrying right now about overworking Zeke. I think you can't work him enough. We're talking about a hyperactive kid that can't sit still. And to me, just – keep feeding them and see where, you know, see where it goes. But that's another one of those questions out of that book I was telling you about, you know. It's like, oh, we're overworking Zeke. No, work him. He's 22 years. Let's see. What's today? July 10th?
Today's the 10th, yeah.
I think his birthday's maybe in a week or so. He turns 22. Seriously? 22? Just give him the ball. Let's go. I don't want to sound like an old-timer, but work the guy.
Mickey, I got a follow-up question on Dez Bryant. You know, he's kind of battled foot injuries the last couple of years, but for me, on the outside looking in, it looked like he became much more like his old self physically the final half dozen or so games of last year. Do you think there was a vast improvement as he went along in the season, or was I imagining things watching him out there?
No, I think he did get better. I think he got healthier. If you remember the last couple off seasons, he either was recovering from off season surgeries or he was in a contract dispute with the franchise tag, and he didn't get off season work like he got this year. So to me, I think that helps him. Dez is one of these guys that, yeah, he's a naturally gifted athlete, but he needs to practice. He needs to practice with the quarterback. He needs to be on the same page. And I think that the repetitions he got this off season will make a huge difference in his production, because you're right. The second half of the season, the last quarter of the season, the playoffs, boy, I'll take that Dez Bryant every day. I think, though, that the off seasons that he wasn't able to participate fully in the practices or chose not to, I think it hurt him. I think it took away from his game. So Yeah, I think if he can continue the way he did at the end of the season last year, he'll be the Dez Bryant everybody expects, and a guy that's going to catch a heck of a lot of passes. And another thing I think that kind of led into that, when you have a rookie quarterback playing that hasn't played, and remember, he really didn't get to work with them that much in training camp until Tony Romo gets hurt in the third preseason game. So this was kind of new, and I think that as time went along, Dak realized that he can trust Dez, that he can throw the ball up to him. I think early on it's like he was doing his reads and going, okay, well, he's covered. And a lot of times Dez may be covered, but if you throw the ball in the right spot, he's not covered. And towards the end of the season, Dak started putting one-on-one balls up for him and said, okay, big boy, go up and get him. And I think the more you connect on stuff like that, the more trust you have in a receiver to throw to him on that back shoulder fade when it looks like he's covered, or just throw it up high and let him go get it. I think their rapport improved as the season went along.
Last one for me on the offense, Mickey. How are the Cowboys going to use Ryan Switzer, who I think could be a very under-the-radar weapon? And then could Rico Gathers do enough in the preseason, you think, to earn regular playing time in 12 personnel?
He's going to have to do a lot, I think, to earn time as the second tight end. From a physical standpoint, I think he's pretty gifted, but I don't know how well he can play the tight end position, meaning know what to do, know the route adjustments, know when he's supposed to go out, know when he's supposed to pick up blitzes. You know, there was a play in the mini camp. He had missed some time. He had, I believe he had pink eye or something like that. He missed some practices the end of OTAs, and he got back in, and they ran a play in the mini camp, and he went out for a pass when he was supposed to pick up the guy that was blitzing, and they yanked him out, and he got mad at himself. Well, those are the things that when you haven't played football since eighth grade, it doesn't come back to you automatically.
Right.
And so he's going to have to show a heck of a lot in the preseason games to earn the trust to at least make the 53-man roster. I mean, you've got a couple backup wide receiver tight ends that you trust in James Hanna and Jeff Swain. And, you know, really one of the big injuries they had last year towards the end of the season was when Swain went down, and they really lost that second tight end. Not a guy that was going to be a big production guy, but just kind of a workhorse guy that you can trust to pick up blocks, to make blocks, to pick up blitzes, to do the right thing. So from Gather's standpoint, yeah, he's a media darling, but he's got a lot to learn about the tight end position. As for Ryan Switzer, I think he's like that little offensive toy. You can do a little bit of this with him, a little bit of that with him. Maybe you go four wide receivers and you use two little guys in the slot teaming him up. So I think it's going to just kind of be a matter of what formations they want to use and how they might want to fool a bunch of offenses. And the other thing that, you know, I don't know that they'll do it, but he's a guy that, you know, you can start him off in the slot and then motion him into the backfield, sort of the way they did Lance Dunbar. And all you got to do is hand him the ball once. I don't think he's the runner that Dunbar was, but he's a better receiver than Dunbar was. So Dunbar was last year's toy. But I think hand it to him once, and then the next time you play somebody, they're going to sit there and go, well, I guess we better practice this, and they might just be wasting their time. But just think about Beasley and Switzer in the slot at the same time with Dez and Williams on the outside. Instead of using two tight ends, maybe use two slot receivers and create mismatches that way. So, and if nothing else, then he's a return guy. I think that was one of the things that, you know, they lacked last year. And I think it'll be a good competition between him and Lucky Whitehead to see who's returning punts and then maybe even kickoffs. Although Darren McFadden has been practicing returning kickoffs, so that's not out of the question. He did that last year in the offseason before he ended up breaking his wrist.
And Switzer certainly was an impactful special teams player going back to college. Moving over to defense, Mickey, one of the things you led off with when we started the conversation was the looming question is going to be perhaps, well, will the Cowboys defense find a way to improve for the third straight season? With that being said, what does this unit need to accomplish in order to take the next step?
They need to continue to improve putting pressure on opponent quarterbacks. It's just not enough so far, and they don't have that guy, and we'll see if one turns out, develops or whatever, that when the offense breaks the huddle, they look around and go, where's 94? We got to account for him. They don't have that guy, but they got a bunch of guys, and I think it's the same thing that I talked about. I think they've improved the depth on that defensive line. Now, can somebody emerge? And really, to me, when they get to training camp, and no matter how they line up that first day, of the four starting spots up front, I think only one settled. Somewhere, somehow, Malik Collins is going to be a starter, either at the strong side defensive tackle spot or the three technique defensive tackle spot. He's going to start. And I think all the other three are up for grabs. Now, they may be out there with Tyron Smith. They may be out there with DeMarcus Lawrence. They may go out there with Benson Mayoa, who everybody's going to say, wow, he led the team in sacks last year. Well, he had six. Okay, it's not like he was going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I think there's going to be a lot of competition up there, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch how they use guys. Do they need Tyrone Crawford to go outside and play strong side defensive end like they did last year when they had trouble from the opening game on stopping the run on the strong side? Or can they use him inside? Can he play the nose tackle spot and leave Malik Collins, who, by the way, is a rookie, and he started 14 games and missed all the offseason and a lot of training camp recovering from a fractured fifth metatarsal. He ended up with five sacks as a rookie, so at a defensive tackle spot. So I think they've got high hopes for him. So after that, it's how do you fit things in? And you know, the forgotten guy in this whole thing is Charles Tapper, who they drafted in the fourth round. And had he not had back problems last year about a week and a half into training camp, my estimation was he was going to win one of those starting defensive end spots the way he was playing. Now, can he get back to that? Can DeMarcus Lawrence recover from the same disc being herniated in the last two seasons and having to go through surgery and get back to the guy that led him with sacks the previous season in 2015 with eight sacks? Can Benson Mayoa, who got benched for a couple games last year and then came back and had the majority of his four of his six sacks the last quarter of the season, can that continue? And then what do you get out of Taco Charlton, your starting your first round draft choice? And I think he's versatile enough that they can move him around if he can't win the starting right defensive end spot, because by no means do I think he's a walk-in starter. Can he help you on the left side? Can he rush in the nickel from a defensive end spot? So from a defensive standpoint, especially on that line, they've got a lot of question marks that they've got to answer. I think they've got contenders. Obviously, the forgotten guy also, David Irving, who's going to serve a four-game suspension, you know, chances were he might have been a starter. I'm not sure on the left side or maybe at defensive tackle where they used him when they went to their dime packages with a three-man line. But he was awfully disruptive. And again, so four-game suspension, where does he fit in when he returns? Because he was kind of up and coming. So a lot of things going on that defensive line.
It sounds that way.
You know, if you're only going to keep eight, I've counted like 13 guys. Somebody's going to either get cut or traded because they can't keep them all.
Well, Mickey, it's funny because I'm looking at the depth chart, and one of the guys you didn't name.
Familiar name.
Is a familiar name to Giants fans, and that is DeMondre Moore, who the Cowboys are also taking a chance on.
And you know what? During the offseason, at one point, because Benson Mayoa missed the entire offseason, he was recovering from a balky knee. And then DeMarcus Lawrence was recovering from the herniated disc surgery. And then David Irving actually got hurt and they were not pushing him into OTAs. Demontre Moore was ending up getting was working with the first team defense at right defensive end. He got a lot of snaps, and there were times they moved him over the left side too. So they took a pretty good look at him. He's one of the guys I didn't mention. And the other guy, a veteran guy the year before that they spent some free agent money on, to thought he could be their nose tackle, was Cedric Thornton. He kind of came on again at the end of the year, but at the beginning he seemed lost on how the Cowboys wanted to play that nose tackle position on their 4-3 line. So those two guys are going to get opportunities too. And it was interesting, and I guess you guys can appreciate this because you saw it, or at least he told me that's where it started. One day I'm watching OTAs, and they're in special teams, and I looked out there.
He's gunner.
And 58 is lined up as the gunner on the left side. And
yep.
I go, well, they must have been short a guy, and they said, hey, just go in there and do it. And then I found out that when he was with the Giants, he actually worked over there because of his speed and size, and the Cowboys were looking at him, you know, as a potential gunner. So that gives him another opportunity to maybe latch on. But again, here's a guy that, what did he do? He played four games last year with Seattle, and my understanding was played well, but they didn't keep him. And the Cowboys had worked him out in the summer and didn't sign him. So I'll be interested to see what he does, because I'm guessing you guys are probably thinking the same thing after seeing him there. This is probably his last shot. You know, he either makes it this year or this with the Cowboys or somebody, or he may not have an NFL career. So I'll be interesting to see how he handles training camp with the amount of competition that I talked about.
Yeah, and Mickey, I can tell you, he has all the physical talent in the world. It's, you know, it's a lot of the between-the-ear stuff with him. If he can figure that part of it out, he does have the ability to have some ability to rush off the edge. In years past, I've always prefaced every Tony Romo question with, I'm sure you're tired of talking about this. So now I get to try a different topic. Mickey, I'm sure you're probably tired of talking about this, but what's going to happen with Jalen Smith this year?
Well, we're about to find out. You know, you can do all the drills that he was doing, do all the running that he was doing, but I always revert back to what Rod Marinelli said when the media around here got all hyped up when they first saw him out there and he actually was going through drills. Because he was working, I guess I need to preface it, during the OTAs he was working the first day and the third day. The second day was the off day.
Okay.
Well, the second day was the day the media got to watch. So they didn't get to see what he was doing. So when they finally got to the mini camp and he worked the days that they got to watch, it was like, oh, wow, look at this. Well, he wasn't participating in team. He wasn't doing many one-on-one drills, and he did a couple nine-on-nine drills. He did a little bit seven-on-seven, and everybody got all excited. Well, Rod Marinelli, when everybody came to him with all this enthusiasm and excitement, and he gave kind of stock answers, and he said, fellas, pads are everything. So to me, what he was telling everybody is, let's see him play football. Let's put the pads on and see exactly where he's at. Because the knee is not totally recuperated. The ACL is good, but he still has some percentage of drop foot that he's got to compensate for. He's still going to have to wear a brace. Now, the doctors think that he can play with this brace, but the question is, what level is he going to play to?
Right.
Is he going to be the fifth pick in the draft like he would have been if he didn't suffer the damage to the peroneal nerve that's given him the drop foot? Or is he going to be the talent of a fourth or fifth round pick? And I think that's the question. And the Cowboys know that. While they're enthusiastic about it, and you might hear Jerry say this or that, they know they got to go to training camp, put the pads on, and see just how he plays football. Because when you do drills, to me, most of the stuff you do is premeditated steps.
Absolutely.
You know what you're going to do. When
yep.
you get in the action, you know, you don't know when you got to push off this way or turn and go this way. And how well is he going to do that without thinking, okay, now I got to place this foot down because I still can't fully feel it. So we'll find out a lot more when the pads go on, and I think we'll find out even more because I would imagine with five preseason games, he's going to get a lot of preseason game snaps, and we'll find out where he's at. But as I always tell people, when, oh, what are they going to do if he can't play? Well, they're going to do the same thing they did last year with Anthony Hitchens playing middle linebacker, and they ended up the number one rush defense in the National Football League. So they've got that spot. Maybe the concern is, and this might have been your next question, is what happens with Damian Wilson,
yep,
the knucklehead who got into a 4th of July instance in a parking lot where he backs into a spot and somebody didn't want to move and he bumped a female, and then some guy came to his car and evidently had either a shotgun or a rifle in the car,
boy.
And he showed it to him, and then he gets charged with aggravated assault, which there really wasn't any assault. But if he gets suspended or, you know, has to go to court and misses time, then what do you do at strong side linebacker? Well, if your biggest concern is strong side linebacker, then you're probably okay. I mean, I think back to when the Cowboys were winning Super Bowls. People would be hard pressed to tell me who the strong side linebacker was.
Which is understandable, you know, given the circumstances of what the team.
And
has.
They don't. And how many times are they on the field, right?
Although
with Damian Wilson, he was going to be Sean Lee's backup on the nickel, and he was playing the dime. So I guess the legal system runs its course. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the league thinks about it. But, you know, of all the knucklehead things to do is get in an argument about a parking spot on 4th of July. It's like, seriously? And this coming off of last year when he missed the majority, if not all, of training camp, when a week or so before they went to training camp, he was out playing paintball and was on the sideline, took his goggles off, and got hit in the eye.
Did he really?
Lost his eye.
Oh, man.
So it's like, seriously, after that last year, and then you do this like 2 or 3 weeks before you go to training camp. So to me, that's a bigger question than I think they can survive. Now, if Jalen Smith comes on and plays like, you know, the fifth pick in the draft, then, oh, boy, they've got something going. But if not, Anthony Hitchens, they'll be just fine at middle linebacker with him there.
Talking about Mickey Spagnuolo, covers the Cowboys for Cowboys.com. And, you know, one last question for me from the linebacking core, Mickey. Sean Lee, who I think has been a huge difference factor for them when he's on the field versus when he's sidelined. If you look at the last two seasons, a player that's been labeled as an injury-plagued player, he's managed to play 14 games and 15 games respectively. How much has Sean Lee turned the corner, in your opinion, that they've maybe put those injury woes behind him, and now he could be focusing on being a reliable guy that's on the field for just about every down and also just about every game?
Well, yeah, and he's another guy like Dez. You know, he wasn't rehabbing from surgery. He basically was, instead of trying to get back to ground zero, he's improving because he was able to do everything in the off season. Now, one thing they did do, and he finally made the concession and, you know, and accepted it, is they kept him out of all the team, the 11-on-11 drills that they did in the OTAs and minicamp to protect him from himself. It's like, he doesn't need that. So let's make sure he doesn't unnecessarily get hurt. If he gets hurt, then get hurt in a game. Now, he'll get some snaps in preseason, but probably not that much. So that was one way I think they were trying to keep him healthy. But when he's healthy, I think everybody's seen, yeah, he's a Pro Bowl linebacker for sure. And he's awfully important to how they play this defense. So it's key. Now, you never know when a guy's going to get hurt or something's going to happen, but if they can keep him healthy, yeah, that's a player that really can make a difference on that defense. And really, if you think about it, you know, I mentioned Malik Collins. There's not that many walk-in starters on this defense that aren't going to be competing for a job. I mentioned Malik Collins. Sean Lee's certainly that way. Byron Jones will be one of the safeties, and I think, you know, Orlando Scandrick should be either a starting corner or the guy that starts on the nickel. But besides those four guys, I don't know that anybody else has got a solidified starting job that doesn't have to compete their butts off when you get to training camp.
Well, Mick, you talk about competing your butts off. I mean, this cornerback position, the Cowboys just decided, I think, on draft day, we're going to draft as many young guys as possible and see who's the best. And frankly, given the draft was really deep at that position, not that bad of an idea. You have Anthony Brown, who played well in his rookie year, going into his second season. I'll put the two veterans, Skandrick and Carroll, aside. We know what they can do. But you got Brown, and then you have Jadobe Awuzie, Jordan Lewis, Marquez White, Xavier Woods, who's more of a safety, I know, so let's kind of push him aside. Of those young corners in the spring, what did you see from them? Do you think they're going to be ready to step in and play a significant role in this defense relatively early in the season?
I don't know if it'll be significant early, but I think they can contribute. And that's another spot that goes back to what I told you earlier about the defense, raising the level of the depth up from the bottom up. I think those guys certainly give them much more depth than they had in previous years. And I'm glad you mentioned Anthony Brown, because everybody forgets about him. This guy started 9 games as a 6th-round pick last year,
yeah.
And he was awfully good. And, you know, I can make an argument that by the time they hit the playoffs, he might have been their best corner the way he was playing. And we're talking about a rookie coming in, and he started on the right side. Then he started inside on the nickel. Then he started on the left side when Morris Claiborne got hurt. So he started in 3 different spots and played pretty darn well. So I don't think it should be assumed that just because they took Awuzie in the 2nd round that this guy's a walk-in starter or he bumps Brown out of a job. It's going to be great competition. You know, Jordan Lewis started off in the OTAs. He was working in the slot. Okay, he's a short guy, so you figured, okay, that's where he's got to play, right? Well, before it was all over, he's playing outside also, so with the second team. So we'll see how all that, you know, works out. Like I said, Skandrick's got to improve. You know, he was coming off last year the torn ACL in training camp the previous season, and I think he played okay, but I don't think he played like the Orlando Skandrick that we'd seen before. So can he get back to where he was? And then with Nolan Carroll, another veteran guy, but, you know, there's nothing in his contract that says he's got to be a starter. So I think, you know, he'll have some competition to win a starting spot. Now, this all may, you know, Brown, Skandrick, Carroll may be the guys to start the season, but I don't know that they may end the season if these other young guys get a chance, because I like the versatility of Awuzie. I like how scrappy Lewis is. You mentioned Marquez White. You know, he's got something. Now he'll be pushed to make the team. And then Xavier Woods, the safety, boy, he looks like the real deal. And Awuzie can play safety too. So I think where they really help themselves, if it's not with the starters, it's when they go to nickel or even when they go to dime. You know, if you look at how they did the dime last year, they would move Byron Jones from the safety spot, and he'd go cover the tight end in the slot when they had the extra 2 extra DBs in. Well, maybe they can leave Byron Jones where he was, and Awuzie or Woods can go in and be that guy. Brown maybe is the guy, the nickel guy, but it's not settled, and that's why I said about the defense. It's just not settled, and so there's going to be a lot of competition, and it's going to be some good stuff. You know, more. I mean, you guys know it. You go to training camp, and it's like, okay, seeing the same thing every day. Well, I think we're going to see a lot of competition.
Yeah.
Where guys, you better not take a day off, or you better not come up with a cramp that you know you think you're going to get a veteran day, because that veteran day might put you at the end of the depth chart. And these young guys, they're pretty hungry and they're pretty sharp kids. So I'll be interested to see how all that turns out also.
Well, Mickey, what you just laid out is a lot of turnover in the secondary for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
And one of the interesting things you mentioned earlier when we were talking to you, you said the Cowboys chose not to bring back certain personnel. I think from the fans' perspective, they see no Barry Church, they see no J.J. Wilcox at safety, they see no Brandon Carr, no Morris Claiborne. That's 2 corners, 2 safeties who played integral roles on the defense. I think it's interesting you use the lingo about the Cowboys chose not to bring them back. So with that being said, how significant are those 4 losses when you look at the Cowboys' defense from last season to some of the new faces they're working in this year?
I think the significant loss is the leadership part. Barry Church was a defensive co-captain with Sean Lee. You just don't replace a guy that's been here, been through a lot, and isn't afraid to speak up. Brandon Carr, while everybody wanted to get rid of him, and it had more to do with the contract he signed, he started every game he was here for 4 years. So you just don't get that. Morris Claiborne probably was one of the more talented guys they've ever had in the secondary. Problem was he never could stay healthy. When he was healthy, he was pretty darn good. The problem was, you know, same thing that happened last year. He starts off, he's playing awfully well, and he gets hurt and basically misses the rest of the regular season. So they miss that. Now, does Orlando Scandrick want to step up and be a leader on this team as a veteran guy that's been here longer than anybody else in the secondary? You know, he hasn't been that guy, but can he become that guy? So who's the next leader on that defense along with Sean Lee? Is it Byron Jones? Kind of a quiet guy, but when he has something to say, he's pretty darn good. So I think that's what they lose most. You know, it's really funny. If you and the fans we know are fickle, they wanted to get rid of Brandon Carr. We got to get somebody better there. So he's gone. They gave up on Morris Claiborne. Okay, he's gone. J.J. Wilcox can't win with that guy. Got to trade him. Get rid of him. So he's gone. So now that they're gone, it's like, oh, what are we going to do without these guys? You know, and it's like, okay, you can't have it both ways, yep. You know. I think the one guy that if they could have felt like it was the right kind of contract, they would have re-signed Barry Church. I think they would have liked to do that. But then he's another guy that, you know, if you think about it, you know, he made this team as a undrafted free agent. And basically was a special teams guy for a year or two before he stepped into a starting job. And he was good, and he'd always be second or third in tackles on the team. So you don't just say, oh, okay, we'll just replace that with Jeff Heath. I don't know if it's that easy. But the other guys, everybody wanted to get rid of them. And then when they got rid of them, it's like, oh, they lost four guys off the out of their secondary. Well, how are you going to deal with that? Well, okay. At some point, you got to get younger. You can't keep getting older. And I think that's kind of the mantra that this team has finally figured out is don't keep these guys one contract too many. Start replenishing with younger guys, and hopefully you can do it and find talented guys in the draft.
Well, Mickey, that's certainly the Bill Belichick method, and that's worked pretty well for the New England Patriots over the last 15 years. Rather let go of a guy a year too soon than a year too late. Final one from both of us, Mickey, and thank you for all the time. Mickey Spagnuolo, DallasCowboys.com. NFC East, to me, the division with the fewest holes, top to bottom, teams 1 through 4 in the NFL. How do you see this thing playing out? Are they going to just beat the hell out of each other, throw the AFC West in the mix too? That's a really good division that they have to play. Are we only going to see one team come out of this division because of how tough all their schedules are? Or do you think two might sneak out, and how do you see the whole division kind of paring down?
Yeah, I don't see anybody running away with it. I think two teams could come out into the playoffs, and I agree with you. They just might beat each other up. You know, everybody sits there and wants to point out the Cowboys' schedule. Oh, they got a first-place schedule. Well, they're playing two games different than they played the previous year. That's it. The problem is playing the AFC West where the competition upgraded, right? And then the other problem is everybody in the NFC East is getting better. Everybody's seemingly solving their quarterback dilemma. One by one by one. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a rat race to see who can emerge with a credible enough record, not only to win the division, but then to possibly grab one of the wild card spots. So I think it's wide open, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, it's funny, we were interviewing Sean Lee, and I pointed out, I said, this NFC East is going to be pretty tough. I said, do you think you guys can be the first team to repeat as division champs since, I forgot when
the
it
Eagles.
Was.
Yeah, the
it
Eagles.
It was back in the,
yeah. in the early 2000s.
Yeah, it was it was the Andy Reid McNabb Eagles
they
in like 06, 07
right?
or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and he goes, oh, thanks for pointing that out. I go, but it's the reality of the NFC East. It's revolved. Everybody's taken turns winning the title, and no one could seem to repeat. And that tells you a little bit about the competition. And the only ones that, you know, if you think about it, and I'm not being a homer here or anything, the only team that was kind of in there for a while every year were the Cowboys, and they couldn't win the last game to win the title.
That's true.
They lose the last game 3 years in a row and lost the division title, and then came back and won it in 14 and won it in 16. We know what happened in 15 when you didn't have Tony Romo for more than four games, and he only finished two. They weren't prepared for dealing with that. But from a standpoint from 2013, 14, you know, 12 on, they were right there the last game of the season every year. They just couldn't get it done.
Mickey, great stuff. We appreciate it. Enjoy two more weeks of freedom. Actually, you know what? I take that back. The players for you guys, the Cowboys are in the Hall of Fame game. They must show up in a few days, right?
Well, next week, and I think what they're going to do is they're going to bring in the young guys for 3 days here before we get on the charter and head to Oxnard. So they'll let those guys do some things here, and then they'll head out. So yeah, it actually starts midweek next week before they take off. So I've had my 2 weeks off and I'm ready to go.
Enjoy it. Thank you, Mickey.
Yeah,
be good.
Mickey, thanks so much.
Enjoy talking with you guys all the time. Give me a call again when you need me, okay?
Absolutely, Mickey. We love having you, too. Love talking football and talking NFC East, Giants, Cowboys, and Mickey Spagnuolo, of course, the Giants and Cowboys. Once again, I wanted to try to get in one more question there about the matchup and the personnel between the two teams. I think the Giants actually match up really well with Dallas, but Mickey gives such complete answers that sometimes you can't get to everything you want to get to.
Well, and we'll have plenty of time to cover that.
Correct.
Leading up to the two Cowboys games, of course, as well.
And we'll have time to get him on the week of the game, too, to talk about that. No question about it. We thank Mickey for joining us. Of course, want to stay tuned to Giants.com all week long. Big Blue kickoff Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday this week. It's me and Lance, and then I believe Lance and Feagles on Thursday.
Well, I think it's you and Feagles.
Oh, is it me and Feagles? Maybe we'll slide you in there. We'll see. We'll figure it out. But we'll be with you all week long, Monday through Thursday, right here on Giants.com. As we continue to preview the rest of the Giants schedule, we have the Chiefs, we have the Raiders, and then we have the Arizona Cardinals, the three teams that we're doing this week on Giants.com. So make sure you stay tuned for all the shows. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Everybody, have a wonderful day.
Have a good one.